This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. In a surprising 11th-hour announcement with an extraordinary timing, the Army Corps of Engineers on Sunday afternoon declared that it would not grant an easement for the nearly complete and hotly contested Dakota Access Pipeline to cross the Missouri River at Lake Oahe, the reservoir from which the Lakota Sioux of the Standing Rock Reservation draw their drinking water. A plan which has drawn many months of protest from hundreds of tribes and many thousands of others from around the nation and the world in a conflict that has thrown in sharp relief issues from the hundreds of years of transgressions against Native American treaty rights to the very current conflict between the commercial interests of big oil and the rights of everyone to a livable planet. What made the Army Corps' Sunday announcement particularly peculiar was that it came literally on the eve of a deadline the same agency had set for the evacuation of Ocheti Sakawin, the largest of three encampments, makeshift towns really, that have been set up to carry out what may be the longest single sustained example of civil disobedience in American history. In last week's KPTZ Compass, we covered the departure from Port Townsend of a caravan bringing support to that effort on Thanksgiving week. Among that contingent was KPTZ correspondent Chris Bricker, who this week brings us a view from the ground at Standing Rock. So now, let's go inside the compass.
The Sacred Stones Camp, the Red Warrior Camp, and the Ocheti Sakawin Camp are resisting the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline, which threatens traditional and treaty-guaranteed Great Sioux Nation territory. The pipeline violates the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868 and 1851, signed by the United States, as well as recent United States environmental regulations. The potential 1,200-mile pipeline presents the same environmental and human dangers as the Keystone XL pipeline and would transport hydraulically fractured or fracked crude oil from the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota to connect with existing pipelines in Illinois. While the pipeline was originally planned upriver from the predominantly white border town of Bismarck, North Dakota, the new route passes immediately above the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, crossing Lake Oahe, tributaries of Lake Sakakawea, and the Missouri River twice, and the Mississippi River once. During the week of November 21st, 50-plus souls from the Pacific Northwest came to be of service and to honor the water protectors of Standing Rock.
What you are going through a transformation that we in show business call becoming bus meat. Bus meat, okay? Well, that means that you're gonna kind of get a little gray, you're gonna have a hard time getting to sleep, and the only reason I'm bringing this up at all is because by the time it becomes morning, you will be bus meat, and you might be a little cranky, you might be like a little disoriented, you're gonna be tired of going like that.
Everybody do that.
We're getting closer. We just crossed into North Dakota. We've been on the bus all night. What are your thoughts as we approach the camp?
Actually getting there, setting up camp, and figuring out how I can be of service.
Well, it was a tiring bus ride, but it's getting exciting to be close to arriving.
Nervous right now, hoping that we even get to where we want to be going.
Wait to be of service to my fellow tribespeople. I have some family here. I have tribe members here.
It was fun.
Did you get any sleep?
Yeah, a bit of sleep, but not too much.
We just turned off the highway. Very large cluster of teepees on our right. It's hard to tell the expanse of the camp from this vantage point. It looks almost like a refugee camp, at least as the darkness sets in. People wandering around. The wind is blowing. Flags of all Indian nations surrounding the periphery of the camp as we approach the entrance. Agua, water, no DAPL, Alaska, indigenous women, Northern Michigan stands with Standing Rock, free red fawn. More and more signs on the periphery. From Palestine to Standing Rock, we are united. We are unarmed. Our host says that it's been a steady flow all day of folks coming to the camp.
The caravan had arrived at dusk on Tuesday, and once we were able to lay out our camp in anticipation of late arrivals the next day or so, the camp kitchen emerged from the truck along with duffel bags, food, and whatever items that took priority before organizing in earnest after breakfast the next morning. Our mornings were cold, of course, and on one of them, snow had blanketed the camp. Just in back of us is a hill on which the press and legal departments are perched. That was a place to catch a cell signal, if possible. Going to camp orientation is a requirement, so that those new to Ochete Sakoan can come to understand that this is a ceremonial camp guided by the seven Lakota values: prayer, respect, compassion, honesty, generosity, humility, and wisdom. The camp is in a constant state of prayer and ceremony. Before participating in an action, training in nonviolent direct action is necessary. We oriented, trained, and participated in our first action on Thanksgiving Day, hundreds of us by the Cannonball Bridge and hundreds at Turtle Island, occupied now by the police, carrying AR-16s with live rounds, rifles with rubber bullets, chemicals, and a water cannon. Turtle Island is a sacred burial ground.
Squeeze, Ko'upasinum Kla, from the Kabul tribe, Washington State. Been here since September. Today we received a warning. We were told that all the women and children to report to the dome, and that they were coming in to remove us by force today, so it caused a high alert. So we came up here to the bridge on Highway 1806. Here we see that the militarized police are still on their side of the blockade. But over here to the east of us, let's say a large amount of detectives are over there. Right now the police are up on the ridge and still pulling in. But ultimately we just want peace today.
My name is Jermaine Tremel, my English name. My Indian name is Tha'oyatewankapiwi, and I'm Hunkpapa Lakota from the Standing Rock Reservation. I was born and raised here. Just had a big, huge, beautiful prayer down at the North Bridge, praying for everyone, praying for all of our people. You know, I want to say thank you to all of the ones that have come and all the ones that have participated and helped us. And our prayers go out to all the families that have gotten hurt and for their sacrifice for what they've given. You know, the camp here is getting bigger, and it's beautiful to see everyone here from different places, from different parts of the world, and we thank them for being here and joining with us in this prayer that started with just a few handful of people, and now it's into the thousands and into across the world. I'm a descendant of Sitting Bull, and I know that his words are being lived today in this community, being a compassion.
I'm John Blumball. I'm a former oil worker, and I turned into a whistleblower because there was an oil spill in my backyard. I saw the devastation of 1 million gallons, killed 40 miles of fish, poisoned my entire community. We have kids with leukemia now in our local school system. My daughter was born with a deformity. My kidneys messed up. My dog died. My uncle died. And that's just my family. There is hundreds of families that this oil spill affected. I have a 1- and 2-year-old, so that's why I'm fighting big oil. Protect my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren, and we're not going to be able to do anything once our water is polluted. These pipelines leak. Every single day, every single pipeline does leak. There is no pipeline in the entire country that is solid enough that it doesn't have 5 gallons here in this river and 10 gallons in this well and 20 gallons a day in this lake. They all leak on a daily basis, and 90% of all the new pipelines are 100% for foreign. We actually export more oil than we import. We don't need these new pipelines. We need to fix the ones that we got. There would be more work than we have for the union members. We'd actually have to hire more people if we just fixed the cracked pipes and the bad pipes and the old pipes. The union's making me very big, large steel signs so that way I can put vinyl on them that says Tar Sands Truth or DappleLies.com. Or my organization, helppa.org, that's helppa.org. So the goal is to get people to come to my website, not to donate, but to get information, to educate. When there's an oil spill, hopefully I can save lives, because they're going to lie about the air sample test. They're going to lie about how toxic it is. They're going to lie about the evacuations. I just want to help people in the future.
Well, the camp is busy winterizing. Number of wooden structures going up with insulation, storage sheds, plenty of 2x4s and frames, stacking up standard components so that they can be put into other structures throughout the camp.
As the severe conditions of a North Dakota winter are approaching, the camp has taken great care in making sure winterization has been in progress and that ongoing meetings take place daily, and winter supplies continue to come into the camp. Although some in North Dakota government and the authorities think that the severe winter will force people out, my impression in walking through the camp and in conversations is that the opposite seems to be true. The camp's medical facility hums like a well-tuned instrument. I had the occasion to talk with the medic not only about the facility itself, but also about the realities of what happened the night of November 20th, the night that tensions ran high and the authorities used brutal force.
I'm Blue Lightning. I am one of the medics here at a Chetty Sikonan camp with the main medical unit here. And I've been here over a month and 10 days now. Originally hail from Lincoln, Nebraska, but my bloodline is with the Ogallala Lakota people. What we do here for the medical station is provide as much competent medical care that we can afford to give due to the conditions and the situations that we're placed in. We do frontline action work for frontline trauma due to CS, rubber bullets, pepper pellets, water cannon, sound cannon. We cover all of that. Plus we do what a regular clinic would do as far as everyday items such as splinters, smashed fingers, stuff in their eyes, pretty much everything from trench foot to dandruff. From the bottom to the top, we try to take care of as much as we can. Anything that we do that is beyond the scope of what we do, we send in to Bismarck or to Fort Yates.
I'm very impressed with the layout here. There are counseling services. There is herbal medicine. There's the clinic itself.
Yes, we try to cover as much as we can, from the midwives to Western medicine, natural medicine, mental health. Very important for everybody that has seen the trauma of the frontline actions and what went on at the bridge, what went on in town, what happened at the North Camp. We have a lot of people that really, it affects them very deeply. They have never seen anything like that, and they're probably going to be affected for the rest of their life because of that. And we really are trying to stress to people, if you're going to come up here, be strong spirit, strong minded, and be prepared for very cold, bitter winters. We need people that have their own provisions for a very hard, below zero, high wind winter.
Were you at the bridge on Sunday night?
Actually, no, I wasn't. I had a back injury, so I was out of that action, but I spent my night with 6 different live video leads, so I was pretty much watching it from their perspective, and then after that, I'd seen what CNN had actually told, and then after that, I had probably about 3,000 people following me, so I put out to them that they had lied. People had seen the video leads and seen that they wasn't putting out fires, and seen that we were not the ones to start the fires. It was actually the police themselves who was chucking canisters over there and started a grass fire, and we were the ones that were actually putting it out. So that is actually open media for anybody who wants to see it on Unicorn Riot, through Johnny Dangerously, and many of the other live feeds that we had that night.
From a source closely associated with the security branch at the main camp, as well as with the medical community as a volunteer, 30 people were sent to the hospital, and there were countless other injuries as well. One girl lost an arm. She was flown to Minneapolis to try to save it, but they ended up amputating her forearm and hand. Another girl lost an eye and probably has some facial disfigurement. It was determined that these were not rubber bullet injuries. They were concussion grenades. The tossing was timed so that they were thrown at people just before they exploded, so that they would explode in very close proximity and above the waist. There are enough witnesses to confirm that these were thrown not as concussion grenades and crowd dispersal, but as a weapon to cause harm. The action took place right at sunset, at dusk, in freezing temperatures. The crowds were dispersed with water hoses. The reports he received from the medics were that people were coming in encased in ice. By 11 or so that night, there was a row of ambulances, and they were deciding which injured should be taken out for treatment. Response time for the one closest ambulance is 20 minutes away. That's the one closest ambulance. The rest must come from Bismarck, and that's a 45-minute run. It is said quite often that the constant wisdom of the elders helps to keep the camp's focus on prayer and purposefulness. Youth, who give themselves to the wisdom and spirit of the elders and the ancestors, can move the world. Danny Milholland of our caravan returned from the sacred campfire with us to share.
This evening I was at the sacred fire. Young woman, she came and introduced herself as one of the six young people that founded the camp. And she explained that they had this vision that they could stop this pipeline from going through, going under the river. They camped on the land nearby hill, and people in the community, friends, you know, came to support them, but they thought they were crazy. But these young people saw the vision that many people would arrive and would pray, and that they would stop this pipeline. Here we are 6+ months later, and there's probably 8, 9, 10,000 people out here. It's an incredible experience, and there's so much strength. The strength and courage that this young woman was sharing was really inspiring, and this is going to be one of many wins to come.
It's Friday now, and the camp is busily preparing for tonight's festivities.
We're talking to Justin Lake, and he is tossing frozen fish fillets into a large box. Tell me about this.
I came out here to Standing Rock expecting to eat some buffalo, but we've been eating fish all week. We brought hundreds of pounds of fish from Port Townsend and Bellingham, fish that was caught mostly in Alaska. This fish right here we're serving today, we're expecting to feed about 400 people. Last night we had it all out to thaw, and it was thawing nicely yesterday, and then last night it just froze again. So this morning we decided to cut it into steaks.
Okay, we're speaking with Justin's assistant, Luca. Tell me about this fish stuff here.
When we were sawing up salmon with saws, it was interesting to see different people's reactions. At first they were thinking we were cutting up firewood, but approached us and realized it wasn't firewood, but salmon fillets. So.
It was a cold night, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, the salmon froze pretty solid, so there wasn't much choice besides cut it up with saws and whatever kind of knife would work.
So we're at another table here, and I see cedar boughs, I see tobacco, I see yarn.
We're making tobacco pouches and cedar bundles to offer as gifts. We're going to have a ceremony today of gift giving to some of the elders here from some of the native people who came with us from the West Coast. These are traditional gifts. There's four sacred plants in many Native American traditions, and that is sage, sweetgrass, cedar, and tobacco. It's traditional to give just a little pinch of tobacco or a bundle of cedar. Cedar's hard to get around here, so it was nice that we were able to bring a huge amount from the West Coast.
Renato, you've been doing just about everything here. I see you standing over there completely drenched in dishwashing liquid and compost and you name it. What's going through your mind right now?
You know, I've always believed in hard work. When you come from a third world country, you see people that have nothing, Quebec.
You know, just to be here and just show kindness and love.
The Port Townsend Northwest Caravan did indeed bring Thanksgiving dinner to Ochete Seco and Camp, but it was agreed that we would serve our dinner on Friday instead of Thursday. Many indigenous people regard the holiday as a day of mourning. Salmon indeed, over 300 pounds of salmon from the Pacific Northwest. That night, we made dinner for allies and tribal members from everywhere.
Where's home for you?
Salt Lake City, Utah.
California.
Oakland.
Oklahoma.
Arizona. Black Canyon City, Arizona.
Mendocino, Humboldt.
Tuba City, Arizona.
Concord, Massachusetts.
Santa Fe.
Northern Vermont. Okay. Sorry, I'm sick.
Home is West Virginia.
Minneapolis.
Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Yeah. Tukwila, actually, land of the Duwamish.
Denver.
Home is India right now, Massachusetts. Yeah, originally India.
Nevada City.
New York City.
Charleston, South Carolina.
Sacramento area.
Iowa City, that's in Iowa.
Kansas City.
Denver, Colorado.
Sun Valley, Idaho.
I'm from WORT in Madison, Wisconsin.
Boulder, Colorado.
Chicago.
We're from Central Wisconsin.
Duluth, Minnesota.
Montreal.
The Ojai Valley on Chumash Land in Southern California.
And I'm same, Ojai Valley, Valley of the Moon.
Home is right here. It's where our hearts are. We're all
in
here.
In the heart.
Hi, where's home for you?
Suquamish, Washington, which is why we came over here for dinner. I get to finally have a meal from home tonight.
Corvallis, Oregon.
Detroit.
Grants Pass.
Yonkdwan, Dakota, Oyate.
South Dakota.
Vermont.
Orcas Island.
From Hilo, Big Island, Hawaii.
Arkansas.
My home is actually the Sichangu Lakota Reservation, Rosebud, South Dakota, but I currently live in Nebraska, and I've been here since August, just back and forth because I am a single parent, so I make my journey here every weekend and every holiday, and this is probably the longest I've been here since Tuesday.
Morning at the camp. It was a beautiful sunrise camp. It transforms itself daily with the amount of people coming in. Ochete Sakawan camp. Frost on everything this morning. Smoke coming out of chimneys and the teepees and the trailers. Just this vast expanse. Pretty soon the sun will be up. It's time to go home. Some of our folks are praying by the fire, offering tobacco or cedar, remembering our ancestors. Up early today for breakfast. Just about ready to serve. 6 o'clock and dark and frosty and freezing. French toast, potatoes, granola, hot coffee. It looks like everything might be loaded up by noon and we'll be on the road. While the caravan was loading up, I had a chance to speak with two leaders of the Common Man Society, Frank and Aiden.
My name is Frank Archambault, Hukwapa Lakota, from here on Standing Rock. I'm the co-founder of the Ikje Wichasha Oyate, which is the Common Man Society here in the camp, formed like 3 months ago. What we do is we back up security, we back up medical, we help in the camp, building their camps or firewood or water or just whatever the case may be on the front lines. We're here to protect the protectors.
I, Adonius Bishop from Kingston, Washington, and I'm with the Ikje Wichasha Oyate as well.
What's your estimate now for population of the camp? Any idea?
It's estimated about 8,000, but looks like to have grown too since then.
Going on 10.
Yeah.
Oh, was it 300,000 that have come through since this all started?
We're at a crossroads here. What I understand is that a letter has been sent to the council. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What did it say?
It was an eviction notice for December 5th from the Army Corps of Engineers.
What do you anticipate? Do you anticipate negotiations? What are your feelings?
Well, we do anticipate negotiations, but also there's contingency plans, which would say that we're not going anywhere. We're still here to defend against this pipeline here.
Were both of you out in the action last Sunday? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
We went out there with a Peterbilt to remove the barricade. They're claiming the burnt trucks were ours, and so we took responsibility to remove those on our own. And in that process, I was shot in the back and then shot in the hand as well. I had 3 concussion grenades go off, and I blacked out on the bridge. Lots of tear gas, and then the water cannon for 5 hours.
Obviously, people had your back.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they pulled me off the bridge and put me in the ditch, and when I came to, I went back in and got some more.
You got up and went back? How big of a group are you, and are you able to keep up with what's going on?
Yeah, we've got about 100 guys, men and women, in our group. yeah, I think we keep up just fine with what's going on here.
That's great.
With a community this size, the issues that we have to deal with are relatively small.
It appears that there's always some way for people that are not prepared to get taken care of. Is that true?
Yeah, there's people in place here, donation tents and such, like your guys' thing coming here, helping us out to those who need the help, getting it dispersed out to the campers so that they don't have to really worry about what they need because it's readily available.
We took the time to honor you yesterday at a ceremony, and I was wondering, what were your feelings about that?
For me, it was a very humbling experience, and I can't begin to express the appreciation that we have for the local people back home to come in and support us the way they did.
It was an honor to meet the people from the West Coast and to see their gratitude for things that are happening here and their appreciation for what we're doing. What we do is like a thankless job, and to really look at yourself in a way that they showed us by showing us this appreciation and honoring us, it gives you that next step forward to do whatever else. It's a good thing, and I appreciate everybody showing up here today, and we invite more people to come back.
My ancestral name is Waith. I got it from my grandfather, and my great-grandfather was the chief of the village of Queets. My English name is Gene Sampson. You know, we learned to enjoy and take care of our life, but I didn't forget the teachings that my elders have taught me. I just didn't do them until later on in life. But it's still never too late to do those things, no matter what day. But I won't forget the faith and the love that you guys have shown, not only for me, but for everybody that's here, you know, to share all your food with the people. It's like, where's that camp at? You know, I'm going over there to get some fish and stuff. So, again, I wish you guys safe journeys on wherever you may be going and whoever you might be seeing. I kind of feel sorry for you guys on that bus cramped up too. Yeah, it's been years since I rode a bus, since I was in school, and I definitely don't miss it. But I rode them on tribal journeys a couple times, and it's like, yeah, really? At least I don't have a bus monitor.
And so that Saturday, the caravan, with the smaller bus staying behind for a couple of days, headed back home to Port Townsend and the Olympic Peninsula. Fresh ideas about a return were already in the air, and as they headed home, they brought back with them a shared community and a newly formed family of travelers.
Creator God, we thank you for this beautiful day and the gorgeous North Dakota sunrise this morning. We ask that you bless our community, our new friends and family here in the camp. Be with them in the next few days, especially as they sort out what's going on with the Army Corps of Engineers and they continue their struggle to keep their land and their water clean for the next seven generations. Some of us are leaving a little piece of our heart here and we'll never get it back fully. But that's okay, because we're taking a little piece of this camp home with us. And we're going to go home and we're going to share our stories and tell people what we saw here and the good work that people are doing. And we're going to ask for people to continue to help us fight and protect this land and this water. So we ask again for your traveling mercies, and we ask for your protection over this land and the people that are staying here. Amen.
The Army Corps of Engineers' decision announced Sunday to deny the easement for the Dakota Access Pipeline to cross the Missouri River at Standing Rock is a victory of sorts, but it may be only of short duration. President-elect Donald Trump was until very recently a stockholder in Energy Transfer Partners, the builder of the pipeline, and has made his support of the project well known. And unlike President Obama, President-elect Trump has not been made an honorary member of the Sioux Nation. With KPTZ correspondent Chris Bicker, who was on the scene at Standing Rock, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. Today's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Chris Bicker and Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans. We'll be right back.